You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, MahoganySilvering.net. Hot Coffee, an interracial romance by Donna R. Mercer. Roman is a playboy, but one too many scandals has put his CEO position in jeopardy. He must find a nice girl one at the board of Hemingway Industries would approve of and get married before the new year. Maya is just the woman he needs with her wholesome clean image. Roman is the one man who has ever held a place in her heart, but she has no plans of marriage, only philanthropy. So Roman must prove his love and earn Kamaya's trust or risk losing it all. Everyone needs a little cream in their hot coffee. An interracial romance by Donna R. Mercer. For more information, visit www.donnarmercer.com. Hot coffee. Get your copy today.
Passion's Pride, Alejandro. An interracial romance author, Mahogany Silvering. Alejandro, the son of a jaguar king, who doesn't want to be king. When he has a premonition of a human woman's fight with drug coyotes, he rushes to save her. He takes her on the run to keep her safe from the cartel, who mistakenly believes that she has stolen from him. Alejandro and Regina fall in love. However, when his father is killed by cartel enforcers, Alejandro is forced to become king. But Regina feels unworthy to be his queen. Can this reluctant jaguar king lead his people, protect his homeland, and make Regina, a human, his queen? Passion's Pride, Alejandro, a romance author, Mahogany Silvering. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today.
You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering. MahoganySilvering.net.
Hello, good evening, everyone. I'm glad you can join us. I'm so sorry for the technical difficulties we seem to be having, and I hope that our guest host, will call back in. But you are listening to Mahogany Says, and I am your host, Mahogany Silvering. So we're having, I guess, Bimoni Boyce today. So I will see if she's called. Oh, it looks like she's called back in. Hey, Moni, are you there? Hello? I guess she's not there. Just hang on just a few moments. We'll be right back.
Fresh Meat, an interracial erotic romance by bestselling author L. Loren. Spending bike week in Daytona Beach was supposed to be research for an upcoming movie role. Smoke had no idea all the perks of being an undercover biker would offer. He couldn't afford any mistakes, so he took a vow of celibacy. However, fate had other plans. As soon as he arrived, a beautiful little Spitfire sparked his engine, and he threw those vows right out the window. Baby Bird captured his heart in one day. Now his mission is to make her his and claim his own happy ending. Fresh Meat, part of the Lunchtime Chronicles by best-selling author L. Loren. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us this evening. And Moni, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, awesome. Okay, well, welcome to the show. I'm sorry we keep rolling. We keep going. So, one monkey don't stop no show. So, technology.
Exactly.
Happy hate. Not at all. We're going to do this. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Mom.
I grew up in a military family. I went to University of Southern California for college. I went to film school there, and so worked in the film industry for 16 years. And then being the avid traveler that I am, I left the U.S. in 2016 to go travel full-time. I sold everything I owned and left the U.S. to go travel for a year.
Wow.
When I got back, that's when I got into writing. Yeah.
So when you came back, you got into writing, and what inspired you to do that?
Well, I had started writing before I left. I was writing fan fiction at first, and then I found the site where a lot of women of color were posting, like, original stories, and at first I just started out as a reader, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to write something. So I would literally, like, come home at night after working, like, a 16-hour day, like, on a set or doing an event or something like that, write, like, a chapter a night, and that's actually how I wrote Redemption of the Heart, my first book that I put out.
Nice. The Redemption of the Heart, what was that about?
So it's kind of a dark romance in terms of he is an ex-con who mistakenly killed somebody by being on the road drunk one night, but she was running away from her husband who was abusive, and when she gets out, she ends up falling in love with this guy, and they don't find out till later on that they're connected through that unfortunate incident. And so it's kind of like, can their love overcome that?
Interesting. Well, that's good. I like that. I like the forgiveness part. And then see if you know, characters can be redeemed, especially if they're pretty bad. Because, like, oh my God, this, some characters you're reading, you're like, oh, I don't think there's any redemption for this one. He got to go.
Yeah,
that's great. So did you always know you wanted to do paranormal stories, or?
You know, no, I didn't. Obviously, when I first started, I was writing contemporary. I've always been a big fan and reader of paranormal, but one day I got this idea for a story, and I was like, oh my God, I have to tell this. And so that was how the Oracle Chronicles was born. Besides reading a lot of that, I also watch a lot of, like, sci-fi, I guess you would say paranormal urban fantasy kind of stuff on TV. And so for me, it was always like, well, I love reading these books, but sometimes it's not always easy to find stories that have the, you know, black heroine. Usually, like, they're the sidekick or, you know, the friend. And I'm like, I want her to be the, you know, I want her to be the lead of the story. I want it to be her journey. So that's how I started writing that series.
Oh, nice. And I started reading the series, the first one. I'm still on the first book, Awakening. And I really got into it. I almost didn't want to put it down.
Oh, thanks. I'm happy to hear that. I will say, because of my film background, I tend to pace things very, because in my head I see it like an episode of TV. So it's funny, most people that read my writing, they're like, I could see that. I was like,
yes, definitely. You could definitely tell. I'm like, wow, this is a show. I'm a movie in my head. I mean, most of the time when I read, it's like that anyway, but this was like, seriously, I'm picturing what they look like. And seeing, you know, play out in my head, and this girl does not know or whatever, but it's just, you know, all these things. And I love Matt.
Oh, I know. That's everybody's favorite. He's actually getting his own. He and Sage are going to get their own spinoff that I'm working on now. So
nice. Yeah, that would be awesome. I definitely say nice to no book. I guess I haven't finished, but I was like, I looked at him like, oh, time went by. It was really interesting. I like the way it started out, and I had no clue at first, like, where this was going. But by the fourth chapter, I'm like, okay, all right, the guy in the dream, all right.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun writing this. It was what I do love about paranormal is, like, the world building and, you know, really fleshing that out, because there's always so much mythology and, like, vampires or shifters and things like that. And so I did a lot of research, obviously, like, in terms of just even kind of gathering. It's like, okay, what are the mythologies, or what can I play around with and make, like, my own thing? So that was kind of fun, of figuring that out, like, what are the rules in my world that pertain to each, like, the witches or, you know, each faction?
Because it is up to the author. I mean, seriously, you can create anything. I mean, I don't understand why people want to get upset. If she wants her vampires to sparkle like marble, let her do it.
Yeah.
Her world. I've had many
exactly.
That's what's so fun
about paranormal.
Vampires don't
sparkle.
I said, well, maybe not in your world, but in hers they do.
In hers they do.
So you'll have to get used to that reality for her.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I know.
So how long have you been writing and publishing?
Well, I guess like everybody, look, I was a writer as a kid. Like I wrote a lot of like short stories and poetry and even like got some published in different anthologies and things like that. And then I ended up kind of putting it down for a little bit once I got to college and I was doing more filmmaking. At that point, I was producing, so I was kind of helping other people tell their stories. It wasn't until, like I said, shortly before I left the U.S. that I will say, like, I got divorced at one point, and shortly after that, some friends thought it would be really good and, like, cathartic. They're like, you used to be a writer. You should write, like, that way, you know, channel, you know, some of what you're feeling into that. And so I'd gotten back into writing poetry and then graduated from the poetry to the fan fiction, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to write. And at the time when I was writing Redemption of the Heart, I had no intention of, like, publishing it. I was just enjoying creating characters and that kind of thing. And so it was while I was gone that I started seeing a lot more women from the site, like, pulling their stuff down to English. And I was like, oh, I should think about that. But while I was traveling, I actually kind of fell into ghostwriting. That was how I was kind of making some of my money, yeah, as I was traveling, was I started ghostwriting for people. So at the time, I still didn't have any books out, but I was just ghostwriting. And even once I got back to the U.S., it had become pretty lucrative for me. So I kept ghostwriting. And so I was still ghostwriting at the time I put Redemption of the Heart out. It wasn't until after that and kind of learning more about the publishing world. I mean, having been a ghostwriter, I definitely don't frown upon it. I mean, I get, you know, sometimes the demand, people want to keep putting stories out and they want to do it at a, you know, rapid release. For me, it became a little bit of an, I guess you could say, ethical dilemma in my own mind. I mean, everybody has to make up their own decision, but for me, it didn't feel as right anymore. I mean, I knew, you know, I was making money off of, but there was something about it that did not sit well with me, so I stopped.
So what was it that bothered you about it, or at least for you?
For me, there were, you know, I Redemption of the Heart was like, you know, people were picking up and reading it. You know, I was getting emails from people like about how much they enjoyed it, and it felt, email this writer and be like, oh my God, I loved your story. And it kind of felt like a lie. I felt bad that I might be thieving, maybe is the word I'm looking for, somebody into thinking that somebody had created this that they did not. And like I said, I do not knock it, because obviously I was a part of that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody, hey, do what you got to do. Like, I'm not here to pass judgment. I just know for me, it felt wrong. So like I said, I stopped.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you want to be true to your story, and right, it is difficult getting someone else to, they can't write the way you do. And
yes, exactly.
So what would you give as advice to new writers that are just submitting, just publish?
I would definitely say, there's probably a couple of things I would say. Don't try to be like everybody else. I think sometimes we forget, and I mean, I've had to, you know, remind myself sometimes, it's that, you know, nobody can write like me and I can't write like somebody else. It's easy to like look over the fence kind of and see somebody else's success, or even just, we read each other's work all the time in romance, and it's easy to be like, oh my God, I want to write like this person or that person. And I think we have to remember that our voices are unique. So the way I tell us, we could all be given the same plot and all of us are going to come up with completely different and unique stories, because we shape, you know, our experiences, our opinions, our whatever drive and, you know, create the stories that we tell. So as much as I might admire or love the writing of someone else, I don't want to tell the story the same way that they tell it. And I think that young writers should know that, because I think there's a lot of, and especially when it comes to like whether you want to do like traditional or indie published or whatever, it's like, don't be afraid to have your own unique voice and style, because that's what's going to help you stand out at the end of the day.
Yes.
But also the other thing I would say is take the business side of it seriously. If you want to be a successful author, somebody that has like longevity, or even to start making a certain amount of money and have this be something that you're doing full time, you've got to take the business side of it seriously.
Oh yeah, most definitely. That I do agree with. I think that gets a lot of people trying to, you know, think they're just going to jump in, get their feet wet, and they decide this is too much. But you got to understand, if you are willing to do this, you got to take the business side to it. It's like, I am not doing what I
mean,
what
you
I got,
know, I hear people like, oh, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. But I'm just like, but it's with any job, even like being a filmmaker, there were still things about it that I did not like, or, you know, was, you know, the stuff that you didn't want to do. But it's like, you got to take the, you know, with anything, you got to take the good and the bad, or the things that you love and the things that you hate, you know, because again, that's what makes it successful. You got to have like all your ducks in a row. Like, I know some people don't like to do social media, but it's, you know, in this day and age, it's how you...
Yes.
you know, people are able to find
That's
you.
That's exactly true. Exactly. I was trying to explain it to my husband. He got his first contract this year with Morgan James, and his biggest drawback was, I don't like being on social media. I said, well, welcome to my world, dude.
Yeah, it's a necessary evil, for the lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, do not know you. They don't know you from Adam.
Yeah.
You got to put yourself out there, and he does not like to do that.
Yeah, because I mean, God, not having an online presence, it's almost like you don't exist.
Yes, and he wrote a book called Redemption, but it's Falling Toward Redemption is the name of his. And he
interesting.
His character falls from heaven as an angel who disobeyed God and destroyed Atlantis. And I mean, it's really cool the way he wrote it.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah. So it's like from a fallen angel's point of view. But God's decided to redeem all of the demons and everyone else who wants redemption. So this angel goes and tries to redeem everyone, take them through the process. It's really cool and interesting. I thought, wow. No. I said, so this is
cool.
And I pushed him, you know, I pushed him to do this. And now he's like, but I don't want to be on social media. I was like,
yeah, but you have to.
Yeah,
and plus, you're, you know, people want to learn more about, like, I mean, you know, you don't have to. And this is, it's interesting because having worked in the film, it's like, it's social media is equally important in that area. So it's like, I'd always, you know, try to explain to people, it's like, you can choose how much you, you know, give of yourself, I guess you would say, or, you know, share your life on there. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be everything, but you do have to have,
right,
you know, a presence.
Yes. That way they know you're a real person.
Yes, exactly.
As a reader, it's really great to find out, you know, and have access to my favorite authors. And it's nice to know that, you know, this, they're down to earth or not, especially during interviews.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and that's why I like doing this, because, you know, I do fangirl sometimes over other authors that I've seen their books that I've
Me
read them.
Me too, oh my,
like,
God,
oh,
I'm totally.
God. It's like, yes.
It was funny because I think it was Jennifer Probst who responded to one of my, or commented on one of my Instagrams the other day, and I was like, oh my God. And she was like, oh, and I was just like, but I mean, even I've been at some RWA conferences. It was funny because I remember I was sitting next to, at the time, I didn't realize it was Yvonne. Like, we're having a phone conversation. I'm talking, I forgot all the stuff that we were talking about, but literally like hours went by. And she got up to go do something, and somebody called her name, and I turned, and I was like, the Yvonne, that I, like, rattle off all the books I'd read of hers. And she was sitting there, like, laughing, and I'm like, oh, my God, I had no idea. I was like, my sister and I read your books all the time. Like, I was totally, like, got a picture with her. Yeah, I was totally fangirling so hard.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
Yeah.
You know, when I was such and such, or your book inspired me to do, you know, and I think that's cool. You know, if someone came up to me and would say that, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God. You know, I felt like I made an impact. But at the same time, it's like you're getting all excited. Because I even had two authors that were on my show. One was fangirling over the other.
Aw, I love that.
I was like, see? I said, see, you got to meet your
exactly.
Idol. Exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry, idol. So what comes first for you? Is it the plot or the characters?
The characters. Almost always the characters. I'm very character driven in terms of the way I like see the plot and like how things would happen are very much based on the way I see the characters and the kind of decisions they would make. So when I first started writing, I started out as a pantser. I was a total pantser, would just sit down and like write. I've developed more now into a little bit of a plotter. I mean, I'm never going to make a completely long drawn out like outline that's like 20 pages deep, but
oh, wow.
Yeah, no, I've seen some people and I'm like, wow, that's a lot. I can't do that. There's a lot for me that I like to see kind of flow on the page as I'm writing it, because I feel like I'm one of those people that the characters speak to me, you know, as I'm writing. It's like they're kind of developing and telling me who they are. So usually for the first few chapters, I still kind of write kind of like by the seat of my pants, so to speak, just to see where it goes. And then from there, I start to get a better sense of the story. So then I'll usually stop and kind of start. For me, it's like I usually know like the overall of where I see it going. So from there, I start doing like smaller kind of like chapter breakdowns of where I like want to see each go, because I write usually in like dual POV, so it's usually alternating in each character's perspective of like, okay, now it's your turn, this person's turn.
Nice.
But yeah, very much the characters come first for me, even down to the secondary characters. I very much like to develop them as well, because again, from a filmmaker's standpoint, your secondary characters can make or break your story, I always feel like. So
that is true.
For me, they have to be really well developed.
And some of them are breakout stars, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I'm finding that out.
Max being one of them.
Yes. He's like, Max needs his own book. I haven't even finished the first book, and I'm talking about Max needs his book.
Yeah, no, I know. Wait, everybody is.
But yes, those are when they jump in and kind of just take over a scene sometimes. And I had it in my last book, Alejandro. But I'm like, I did not know where that character came from because that was not in my outline nowhere at all. Just like all of a sudden, boom, here I am. Like, where you come from and why are you in this story? I know that's crazy, but I know that a lot of people are just, they know what I mean. You're trying to write.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So how do you come up with the titles for your books?
Oh, my God. I'm the worst because usually, for the most part, the titles don't come until after I've written it. And I have, like, pulled people and, like, called up. Like, I'm the worst. I hate, like, almost next to writing the blurb, I hate trying to come up with titles. Like, it is rare for a title to come to me, like, while I'm writing or anything like that. It is a chore. Like, it is, like I said, next to blurb writing for me, it's like one of the things I hate is coming up with titles, because to me, I suck at it.
Oh, well, actually, I like your title. I mean, but
well, thanks. Well, like I said, that's because a lot of, like, a lot of external help.
I know. In trying to do series, I'm learning that sometimes they don't always just come consecutively, and I'm supposed to put them out like 3 months, you know, at the latest.
Yeah.
Apart from each other, but I have a hard time doing that because I didn't even know what the title was, where they were going to go, what was going to happen until like last week. And I've been waiting.
Yeah,
all
you know,
time.
Writing the Oracle Chronicles actually is what helped me become a little bit more of a plotter, because I was like, okay, if I knew there was going to be at least 4 books, but I was like, okay, what is the story that's going to take me to that point? So that did require a lot of me starting to, okay, how, like, what's the end game? Like, who are the villains, or who turns out to be somebody that maybe we didn't expect and things like that. So I wanted to make sure I was dropping, like, those Easter eggs, those crumbs as I was going along. So that did require me to really think ahead a lot more than I had in the past. And so writing that actually is now kind of shaped my, like, my future writing in terms of, I mean, right now I'm working on a few more like contemporary series where I start on some of the spinoffs that I plan from this, the universe of like the Oracle Chronicles.
Oh.
But even in with contemporary, you know, it's like, okay, where are these stories? What are like it's funny because with a lot of my contemporary, they're more like standalones within the same universe in the series.
Right.
There's one right now that I'm writing where it's like it follows like the same storyline through like a trilogy, but for the most part it's like they're all brothers and, you know, whatever, and so everybody has their own story. But I found with paranormal, I liked the, you know, kind of cliffhanger. I mean, I know some people, it's funny, people say they don't like cliffhanger endings, but most people, it's like, you read the freaking Harry Potter books. They were essentially, it's like, yeah, could they be read standalone? But you wouldn't necessarily pick up Half-Blood Prince and read it out before you read, you know, like the first book.
Exactly. You wouldn't know
or at least I wouldn't.
At all. I would be totally lost.
Yeah, exactly. And so I like those kinds of stories. Yeah. So it's like, you always hear that. Like, some people are like, I hate cliffhangers. I'm like, secretly you love them.
it depends on the story for me, though. Because sometimes
really?
It's like, no. Come on.
I could definitely relate. Because I'm thinking of books where I've literally wanted to chuck the book across the room.
Exactly, yes. Those are the ones I'm talking about. It doesn't happen with everybody, because I do like some cliffhangers. I even have a cliffhanger in my own book, but so far, and it worked because it led me right to the next story, but ooh, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, oh, now y'all decide to be quiet. Wait, what you want? You're not talking now?
Exactly.
When I want to sit down and write. Everybody quiet. So how do you handle writer's block? Or does that even happen?
You know, it's funny. It's not so much blocking of like, I don't know what to write. It's I get bogged down in sometimes like the words or how I want to say it. So sometimes I get stuck like because it's like I'll have it outlined out in terms of what needs to go in the chapter or what's coming next. But then I start getting bogged down and, well, wait a second, I wanted to use this word or have it happen this way. And so I start to get blocked because I get overwhelmed by like, okay, wait, that's not the way that I want it. Because it's like, oh, I've written something and then I'll come back and look at it. And then I find like 20 minutes have passed where I'm stuck on this sentence, you know, where I'm just like, okay, yeah. I either have to like put this thing to the side because I tend to write linearly. I usually don't write out of order almost ever. So I usually write very linearly. And so occasionally when I find myself blocked, I'm like, okay, I'm getting stuck in the weeds and it could be like tomorrow and I'm still going to be in the spot. So I either have to put this to the side and work on a completely different project or at that point, like I said, make the concession of like, okay, I know I want to keep writing in order, but if I'm going to make progress, I've got to move a little bit ahead and come back to the scene. So I usually just try to, and if that doesn't work in terms of either just like jumping to another scene or even working on another project, a lot of times, like I'm very, like I love the arts in general. I mean, from films, you know, music and all that. So sometimes I might put on music or sometimes I might just be like, you know what, it's time for a TV break. Like, let me go, like, sit and watch, like, one of my favorite shows and, you know, get a sense of some of their storytelling and really, you know, so it's not, I don't, as a filmmaker or anybody who's created that kind of content, I almost never really watch something without, like, kind of seeing and, like, looking a little bit deeper to see, like, oh, they chose this camera angle or they, and that can be a little annoying to other people I watch TV with because I make comments about those things. But that's always interesting to me. And again, as somebody that creates, like, I like to see the choices because then it helps me thinking of, like, why they choose to do it from that angle or to tell it from that person's perspective. And sometimes that helps me think about maybe what's might not be working or why I feel blocked in that particular thing I'm working on.
Oh, well, see, that's interesting. Because I want to actually learn screenwriting because I do have a story that I want to see it. I actually want to see it on film. Just, I mean, as a movie or a TV series, I can see it. But it's like, I did not know.
Oh, you have totally right it.
Because I mean, the story is written, but I have to learn how to write it as a, you know, as a screenplay, I guess. And that's one of my things I would like to learn because I do look at angles or why they're standing there. And I picture the whole scene in my head, which is weird.
Yeah.
Because, you know, writing, I try to make people tell me
don't let anybody
tell
you it's weird. I freaking love that your brain thinks that way.
It's like, you know, because people tell me when they read my books that they're like, I can picture myself there. I feel like I'm there. I can smell it. I can taste it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's because I'm a sensory. I'm describing everything in the room, what they're standing next to, what's this, and what's, because that's how I see it. I'm looking about the room, the characters, and I'm looking at. So I think it's kind of weird, but I guess after talking to you, I don't feel weird anymore. About doing that.
No, not at all.
I like doing that. I was like, what's this in here? And I look for Easter eggs, you know, when I watch a movie. So it's the same thing with writing.
And that's like my favorite thing, especially whether it's, you know, just one movie or like you watch the series and then you go back to see the things where they planted all the Easter eggs for you to find later when you watch it. I love that.
See, I do too. See, okay, now I don't feel so bad because not everybody does that. But yeah, I love looking for that. And that's little YouTube videos. And like, so what you missed when you saw the movie.
Yes, exactly. Little,
yeah, I love watching those. And my daughter's like, spoiler alerts, Mom. I'm like, no. I've already seen the movie. Not spoiling.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see what I didn't notice.
Yeah, because I'm always interested in why people made the decisions, you know, why a director or a writer or whoever, an actor made the, you know, the decisions that they make, like how to tell a, you know, or how to portray a character a certain way or why, you know, to choose that character to tell that part of the story and different things like that. I always find it interesting and fascinating.
I do too. But what irks me to no end, being former military, when you have a military character, why do you have them
you
with a
hat
like on?
You sound like my dad.
Inside?
My dad does because my dad was Air Force,
no,
so he's the same
you
way.
Don't do that. That's not what
why to this day I refuse. I'm like, I am not writing any military characters. Mm-hmm. It's like, even though my dad was in the Air Force, I was like, I'm staying away.
Mm-hmm. I know, that's, or their insignia is wrong, or their gig line is off from the uniform. And just like, because we had to learn all these things. It was drilled into us. To face the
I did explain to my dad once, there's kind of like an unwritten, I guess you could say, rule. And it was always one of those, I guess you would say, like mythology that within filmmaking or whatever, that you weren't necessarily allowed to have things be like precise or different things like that, which is why sometimes you'll see, because I forgot, I was watching something with my dad one day, and he was like, he's whatever rank, he would never have his, like, I can't remember all the terminology he used, but like it was something off with the uniform. And I was like, I don't think they're technically allowed to have it be completely precise, which is why you'll always see a little bit of something that's skewed or, So that is, so there is, I guess you could say, a reason behind sometimes some of the mistakes that you see.
Of course, they're not going to, you know, have it exactly like it, but. You know, but if you
but even like he's like sometimes
cast,
even
you know,
just plot wise.
That's also true. You know, I think a few of them did a really great job, but there are several of them that are just like, oh no.
You're like, who's the consultant on that?
Right? You, what consultant did you get? You know.
Yeah.
Some of you can tell they had one because you know it's But I digress.
Oh, I could talk about this all day. So.
I know, right? So what time of day do you usually like to write?
During the pandemic, like, God, I got to get better about, like, getting up. I could literally, like, sit at my computer all day these days. But typically the sweet spot for me is actually, like, super late at night. I'm a little bit of a vampire. I will write. I usually sometimes start writing, like, to me as early as, like, 10:30 at night. Usually sometimes I won't even start till, like, midnight. And I'll write until, like, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm just, like, I don't have the distraction of, like, my phone dinging from every notification coming from social media. I don't have to worry about people phoning me because most everybody's asleep.
There you go. Yes, house is quiet. Yeah. And dog is asleep and not barking.
Exactly.
So. That's just the best
time. So it's just me and my brain.
I know. I was telling my daughter the other day that I think my internal clock's off, and she said, no, that's just people thinking that they have to be up and working at a certain time that comes from having a work day. She said, but actually, your body knows when is the best time for you to be creative or the best time for you to do this or that. And it's like, oh, you sure you said that?
I like her perspective. I never thought about that.
I'm like, okay, where'd you learn that from? She's like, I read. And she walked out. I read too, but I haven't read that. But thank you. She does. She's a sweetheart. She does a lot of stuff like that. But she's also, she has a form of autism. And she is on the higher end, I guess, of the scale.
Highly
functioning and highly intelligent. And she's,
wow.
I mean, just the things, level-headed out of all my children. Just go get her.
Yeah.
Knows what she wants to do. Has everything planned out. Like I said, she's 17 and she wants to do this, this, and this. She had everything. Now she's going to get her car. I'm like, why couldn't your brothers and sisters have done that? But
how many kids do you have?
I hear that. Don't compare me to them.
How many children do you have?
I have six.
Aww.
Four girls and two boys. But the eldest boy I didn't get a chance to raise. That was my ex wife's 10. So the youngest boy is who I'm raising.
I have a
really cool bunch because there are a lot of creative minds here, from drawing to writing to singing. It goes through. One of them got a different gift, but they're all creative.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, she's not the creative part. She's the, I guess, kind of, I tease her.
Analytical?
She's, you know, yes. Very analytical, and I say she's Spock-like for people who like Star Trek because I am a Star Trek fan, and she's my Spock.
I love that. I'm a twin, so like both of us have very different like ways because my twin's a lawyer, so she's definitely very analytical.
So what's that like being a twin?
You know, it's funny because growing up, I think there's a lot of things that I was unaware of in terms of, you know, you have like this built-in best friend, because we're very close. And you have kind of this secondhand way of speaking with each other and dealing with one another. And sometimes it can be, I think, alienating to some people, especially when they're around and it's maybe just like the two of us and one other person, because we, whether it's like we're fighting or we're doing something, like, you know, it's weird because it's like, you know, that's what I was born into in terms of our relationship. And so it's interesting when I'm dealing with other people, and sometimes I have to be conscious, like, oh my God, I'm not like making you feel uncomfortable, or, you know, you feel like you're a part of like the conversation or the whatever, especially when it's just like the two of us and one other person. Cause like I said, we have a tendency to, you know, very much like, you know, it could be something. I feel like, have you ever seen that movie Four Christmases? With Vince Vaughn and Reese. So there's that moment where they're playing the game with his brother and his wife. And it's all these things like, you know, the sock on the dresser. And he's like saying words that you're like, how is he getting that from that? That's like literally sometimes our conversations. And so people are like, what is going on right now?
But you guys,
and so a lot of times I'm trying to be very conscious of like, okay, don't go into like twin brain, I guess you could say, when I'm around so many other people that, you know, it might feel like, okay, there's other people in the room besides you guys.
It's like someone speaking a foreign language.
Because we are, I mean, and plus we're very competitive with each other.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I remember we did a marathon together some years ago, and we were both like really hurt. Like, I mean, God, I don't know if you've ever done one, but your body is like broken after a marathon. And so we had to take ice
baths. I've only done 1 mile.
And I was literally like, I have to outlast her by like a minute. So she did...
No.
You know, 9 minutes in the ice bath, I have to do 10. If she's done 10 push-ups, I have to do 11.
Wow. Yeah, that is competitive. It's very competitive.
But no, we love each other. But it's been great. It's nice to have that kind of thing, because it's like it keeps you like motivated, or, you know, pushing forward to do like the next thing. So we're always very much like encouraging of each other.
Oh, well, that's good. Does she read your book?
Oh, yeah. She's definitely. It's funny because she's like one of the people I bounce a lot of ideas off of from time to time, because she's an avid reader of romance. So it's always nice to kind of like, well, I was thinking about this. Tell me how you feel about, you know. She's actually the one, too, that actually helps me come up with better titles, because like I said, if I were to tell you some of the ones I've come up with in the past, and she's like, no, let me help you with it.
Like, that is not what needs to go there.
No.
So you also do a lot of traveling. So what are some of the places?
Yes, I love traveling. Ooh, let's see. It's always, you know, because I have different reasons for loving a lot of the places I've been. For instance, when I went to Egypt back in 2015, I had just went natural. And so I was, you know, at that time I was like 35 years old. You know, I'd had relaxers most of my life. So my hair had been like, you know, straight and, you know, what the beauty standard is, you know, that we've been fed. And so I was just going through this period of like, oh my God, am I going to go back to the creamy crack? Am I going to like ride this out? And like, and it was funny because we're there and all these, you know, all the, you know, Egyptians and stuff, they would comment. I mean, not even just the women, but the men would be like, oh my God, your hair is so beautiful. And, you know, and it was kind of like, I needed that. I needed that, like, to remind myself that yes, our natural hair is beautiful. And so it was amazing to be in this other country and have these
and
people
have
like, oh my God. Yes. Yeah.
I know. I wish we had more of that in this country.
Yeah, me too.
You know,
but now I'm definitely like hashtag big hair don't care.
Yeah, because we have to have laws that say we can wear our hair natural. You know, I used to be a fighter.
Yeah, tell me about it.
The biggest thing, you know, I had to straighten my hair. I said, well, then you're going to give me a pay bump or something, because if I have to keep relaxing my hair and feel by your standards of beauty, I mean, that cost me. That's $65 every, you know, 6 to 8 weeks and burns.
Yeah,
down
not only does it cost you, but just from a health perspective, you know, because when you think about what's in a relaxer, I mean, you know, I was trying to explain to somebody once, I was like, there's a lie. I was like, it burns it could burn a hole in you literally if you left it on your, you know, scalp
that's
too
exactly
long.
Exactly right. Yeah. And
you know,
I
so I was like, think
burns.
About that, like what we have to endure to be accepted in terms of, you know, from a beauty standpoint.
I know. And a lot of people didn't understand that or even know unless they've actually gone through the whole process. And it's just, you know, I went natural 10 years ago and I loved my afro, but it got to be too much. So now I have it locked.
Yeah. No, it is. That's what I was like, natural hair is a lot of work.
it is a lot of work. And I kept
I love it, but it's a lot of work.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, arms were aching, and I said, oh, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, because I do. My hair is, like, thick, and it's big. And like you said, days I have to detangle, like, I almost, like, I don't want to do it.
Because
mm-hmm. like you said,
pain.
My arms are, like, so tired.
Yeah. It's like everything hurts, and I've had 2 neck surgeries, so everything hurts from the neck down. And I'm just, no.
Yeah.
I don't like to spend all day in a beauty shop. Yeah. So we're going to have to do something.
Yeah, God, that used
this.
To drive me crazy.
Oh, yes. My mom
especially,
just,
you know how it
I
goes.
Mean, like,
you, your appointment's at a certain time, and you go in there, and they got 2 people. I'm going to get to you in 1 minute.
But you were supposed to be ready for me when I came in. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You said 1 o'clock. Why are you not ready?
Yeah.
No, but now I found an electrician. She has... You are the only person in the shop, period.
Yeah, no, I had found somebody like that as well.
Yeah, she is like, no, you're not going to come in there and find nobody else sitting there waiting because she doesn't like that. And when we have our appointment, it is just us. And that is just...
Yeah, like my time is just as valuable as yours. I don't want to be sitting here for 4 hours.
Right. And she said that she's a lot speedier that way. She gets people in and out, and it's not a big deal. And I'm like, oh, no more 4 or 5 hour beauty salon all day, beauty salon on Saturday. Wasted your whole entire Saturday. So
exactly.
That we had growing up. Because you know all the stories and everything? They sit under the dryer.
Yep.
I was little. I learned so much by sitting in the beauty salon.
No, that's real talk. Like,
I'm 10 years old looking at everybody, watching the ladies just talk freely as if I'm not even there, you know?
Yeah.
And my mom took me every 3 weeks. We went to the beauty salon, me and my sister, like clockwork. We knew, this is Saturday. We ain't going to get nothing done today. we already knew because I was 3 heads, my mom and me and my sister. So we knew it was just, that was it. I brought books so I could read the whole time, you know, and still listen, even though I'm reading, but I could hear the conversation. They thought that dryer was
He's dropping on everything going on.
Exactly. But anyway, so tell us where we can find your books and if you have a website.
Yes, so I do have a website. It's my name, moniboyce.com. I sell all my books wide, so you can find them on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Apple, Google Play, and then even other sites like Walmart and Books A Million and things like that, especially if you're somebody that likes purchasing paperbacks. I always release a paperback copy of my books as well, so you usually can find them on ebook and paperback. Redemption of the Heart right now is the only one that has an audiobook. I'm about to put out the audiobook for Awakened within the next couple weeks. So I'm just finishing figuring that. Right now I'm trying to do my research before I, like, the audiobook for Redemption of the Heart, like, got licensed, so I didn't have to deal with, like, where to put it. So this is my first time trying to navigate the waters of, like, you know, putting out an audiobook and making sure that I'm doing it correctly.
So who did you use for your audiobook?
This time I used, was it Pink Flamingo Productions? Yeah, I used them for this one. So I paid for this one myself and everything, and they're the ones who did the production and everything on it. They've done a really good job.
Oh, nice. Well, I look forward to hearing them, because I do, like, every once in a while I listen to an audiobook.
It's funny because it's like I love them for the, like, revenue stream in terms of books, but I'm not really, like, a fan of listening to them myself.
I do. It's kind of like this, you know, if I don't, not in a place where I can hold a book, it's nice to hear one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or like if you, sometimes I'll try to do it, like, to go to sleep and I'm listening to it and I have to shut off at a certain time, you know, like listen for 45 minutes or whatever and then it cuts off, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like watching a movie in my head. To me, it's like watching TV. It's the same thing. But now I can hear the characters, you know, it's not just me reading, but I can hear them.
Exactly, yeah.
So it makes the story come alive more for me. But yes, definitely. That's a new one. I used ACX because I only had 1 book on audio, too. So, and they were pretty good.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I
might have to pick your brain then, because I'm just like, how do I, like, what should I use? because I know there's like Find Away Voices,
For your audition, like you're auditioning people to read your books and stuff, and yeah, some of these books, I'm like, you didn't really audition that person, did you? Because I have a book that I really,
yeah,
because really
that was the thing,
because
I struggled even with, you know, choosing my narrators, because I'm just like, oh, I want it to be amazing. But I think they did a really good job, so I'm very pleased.
That's good, because I heard some of them, they're just, wow, like that is not what I expected. Or they have a really nasally voice. And you just...
Yeah, didn't meet your expectation of what you had in your head for, like, what,
like,
you were.
I know,
yeah.
I know you had to hear this woman audition for you. And you got me to let her read. That's interesting. Because, you know, you want an engaging, soothing voice when you're reading, and then a voice that actually acts like the characters that they're portraying, especially the actors.
Yes.
Those just, like, so I was very fortunate to find Tony because he was amazing with his accents. He actually spent time in West Africa, so he knew exactly what I was talking about. And I was like,
oh, awesome.
So great. Because he nailed it. I was like, and he's from England, but he also did an American Southern accent very well. I was like,
yeah.
I can always do our accents, but we can't do theirs.
Right? I know. That is so true.
It's like, they do ours perfectly. I would have never known some of these actors are English, because I thought, you know, when I'm watching them, you know, act, and then they're all set and they have an interview, and all of a sudden they're like, you're English? What do you mean? What is this?
Yeah, because I had a friend who was watching, I don't know if you watched this show, Snowfall on FX, and she didn't realize the lead guy is a Brit.
I didn't know he was English, too. I didn't know. I watched an interview with him, and it was his interview that I saw where he's like, nope, he had a rap star.
I see that same one.
He's waiting for him down the bottom. I'm like, okay, I'm going down there because I'm like threatened now. I feel fear because he told me to get down here. I'm like, should I really go?
Yeah.
But yeah, but he does an amazing job, because I would have never known. Had I not seen that interview, I would have never known that he was English, or that he was just brought, you know, and just came over here not even that long. So. Like,
exactly,
him,
yeah.
He picked up English. I'm like, oh, okay. Or American accent, I will say. Well, it has been great talking
to you. And then that particular type
because,
of American accent,
yeah.
You know, that's always
because,
when you have to get into like the dialect
slang.
In whatever region you're, yeah.
Exactly. Because I know just all over America, we all have different accents here. And not even just the Southern thing, but just the Boston, the New York, the Jersey, the, you know, there's even like a Southwestern accent as well.
Exactly.
You know, you all, I'm born and raised in the South, and nobody seems to believe me. I said, no, I'm from the South. No, you don't sound like you're from the South. Yes, I do, to me. But
yeah, it's funny because usually some people are like, where are you from? Because I feel like I hear bits and pieces. Of, I was like, that's part of being in a military family. I mean, from living in California, I use dude, like usually after everything, I'm like, dude, seriously.
Yes,
and then I do say y'all
sometimes
when I'm talking. So.
I know, especially bad during the Valley Girl thing in the 80s. That was so funny.
Oh, yeah.
Like, gag me.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, totally, yeah. For sure.
Yes. I'm like, there is no way you're from here. I said, yes, I am. But that was funny. So I've enjoyed talking with you, and I hope you come back and get a chance to host with me when I'm talking to another author.
Oh, yeah, I would love
that
so much. That would be so much
fun.
Know,
that would be fun, because, I mean, I'm trying to get Rave to be able to do this on video, but I'm not there yet. I'm trying, but I'm not there yet. So I'll try to get over my bashfulness. Because it's like, I feel natural, normal talking, but then I get, you know, there's a camera on me, and I'm like, okay. What am I supposed to do here?
Just treat it like there is a good friend on the other side of it.
Do that. Well, thanks for coming on the show. And for those of you that had a chance to listen, I've been talking with Moni Boyce, who is a paranormal romance author and contemporary author and all-around lovable person. And she is one of my... Soul Sister Romance authors, that we have a group of us awesome ladies, who led by Trish Harley McCarthy, and it is great that I got a chance to sit and talk with you and definitely come back on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a really great time. It was so good. I mean, I know we haven't had a chance to meet in person, but it was nice to connect this way.
Yes, definitely. So everyone, enjoy your evening, and I wish you blessings, peace, and love. Don't stop now. Come on.
You have been listening to Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverane at mahoganysilverane.net. Thank you and good night.